Hi class, it's Dr. Hughes, and I am so excited to be in this home stretch with you in this last discussion about assessment and evaluation of exceptional learners. We have gone from the very beginnings of when a student demonstrates some challenges where we become concerned. Perhaps in our MTSS process, when we are providing interventions to students across tiers 1, 2, and sometimes 3, and collecting the data that is going to help us make good decisions about students and what we need to do for them, all the way through to assessment of students with a variety of tools, including standardized assessments, as well as other methods, and collecting that data, and then coming together to decide as a multidisciplinary team whether or not a student is eligible under IDEA, under one of the 14 disability categories in Rhode Island, to qualify as a student who has a disability that needs specially designed instruction and is therefore eligible for special education services. And, you know, certainly it is really incredibly important to remember the whole basis of this course, which is you, the evaluator, and everything that you bring to the table in terms of the biases you may have, the, you know, ideas you may have about a particular situation, and putting those to the side and looking objectively at the data that you're able to collect, to observe, to be empathetic to a student's situation. It's incredibly important to do that as a special education teacher. And when we're considering a student's information, the data that we collect and the observations that we have, and we're looking specifically at the assessment, we are looking really across broad strokes of their achievement in all areas. And we're answering three key questions that you must remember in assessment and in special education eligibility, which are: 1, does the student meet the criteria for a disability category? 2, is there an adverse impact on educational performance? And 3, does the student require specially designed instruction? And teams get often a little mixed up on 2 and 3, especially because the category and the disability category can be somewhat easier than the other two, which is, what does adverse impact on educational performance really mean? We must understand what grade level expectations look like and where the student's scores fall within the standard deviations, and how far below average their scores fall, and how that compares to the other disciplines around your assessment table, your multidisciplinary team. So the other part too is the specially designed instruction, meaning that if you do not find the child eligible, they don't need specially designed instruction. And what does that actually mean? It means the instruction that we're going to provide in an IEP, which is going to be delivered by a special education teacher, which is very different than general education. It's not the same as, and it's not more of, it's specially designed specific to that particular child. And that's what the IEP is all about. And we need to make that decision. We need to make that decision based on those three categories, I was saying before I got cut off in this little podcast. Just moving on, I wanted to also talk to you again about that piece about the eligibility committee, as your text talks about it, or the assessment team, your multidisciplinary team. By law, you need to have certain individuals involved in that team. And of course, we've talked about this. It involves the parents. It involves a general education teacher, a special education teacher, a district representative. So again, this is a local education agency, they're called an LEA, which would be, could be a chair of your team. It could be the principal. It could be your special ed director or special ed supervisor, depending on how your district runs that. But it is someone who can speak to the resources of the district, and can approve services, et cetera, and things like that. and also someone who can interpret evaluation results. And so this is usually the school psychologist who steps into that role. This structure is intentional. It ensures that there are multiple perspectives around the table, that we're within legal compliance based on IDEA, and it also provides shared responsibility about the needs of what is about to happen, what the needs of the students are at that particular time, and what decisions we need to make based on that. So incredibly important, the makeup of the team. Additionally, in Rhode Island and of course across the nation, eligibility is not just about having a disability label. It really isn't. It's not just about the label. It's about the adverse effects of the disability on access of the student to make progress in general education. And again, special education is not in place of, it is in addition to general education. But does the disability adversely affect access, adversely affect progress, or adversely affect participation in general education? We need to make that determination. And the additional piece is requiring that specially designed instruction, the instruction that will come from the IEP. So for example, if you had a third grade student with strong verbal reasoning and maybe some challenges with, or significant challenges with written expression, inconsistent classroom performance, say we had an evaluation of the student and we found that the student had average cognitive ability, but below grade level written output, and the teacher reporting that, the student's avoiding particular tasks in writing and potentially reading and is often frustrated. Sometimes a parent might say at a meeting, well, I think maybe, my son just needs a little bit more time. Here's the time where we as a team need to kind of have that discussion at the table about, is this a skill gap that this child has? Is it that, yes, the child needs more time, but also needs specially designed instruction? Is this a disability that requires specially designed instruction? And having that very careful and thoughtful conversation with the parent, remembering that these are big decisions, and especially in initial evaluation for special education, these are big issues for families. So we want to be very thoughtful about how we approach how a parent is thinking, and try to work with them as a valued team member in this conversation about eligibility. So, in that particular scenario that I just talked about, you might want to think about additional data around the table that you would need, or additional discussion around what that means around more time. Well, what does that look like in the classroom? How does that translate? What kinds of screenings could we do, or what other data would we need to collect to really think about, is this a child with a disability who needs an IEP? And it comes down to what the overall eligibility packet looks like. And the packet is really the collection of all of the assessments and data. Now, you've done a really nice job this semester in your MTSS project collecting data from your probes and graphing that, etc. And each of your districts will have a different way of doing that, and you will have different programs that you work within that you use as progress monitoring, universal assessments, meaning across the district that you're all using, like iReady is an example of one, AIMSWeb is another example, and all students are assessed using that same universal method, and then we see where the students are that are struggling and have difficulties. So all of that information from the universal screeners, your curriculum-based measures in MTSS, results from interventions, then again, based on all of the standardized achievement testing that you do, any observations, those have to be meaningful and they have to be comprehensive so that the referral that you're making to special education is of quality. It's the whole foundation of the entire process moving into eligibility. So we need to make sure that we have referral and consent for evaluation. we have a good social history. Often the school social worker will accomplish that. Observations in areas of preferred subject area and in areas where the child is struggling. Also, we've talked about this in class about, you know, observations on the playground or in the hallways, or, you know, what it looks like socially for a particular child at lunchtime, for example. In addition, in that packet of data will be the psychological and educational evaluations, your educational evaluation in a template format. The one that we have used in class is pretty much a basic universal template, but your district may have a couple of pieces that look a little bit different, and you would know what that is based in your district. But we want to make sure that we're making decisions that are rich in data, that are consistent across sources, and able to withstand a due process review. And of course, that's always looming in the background, especially in my role. You want to make sure that you are making good decisions based on data with correct information, with assessments that have been done correctly, with fidelity, and have been standardized, obviously, and we're producing data for consideration for eligibility. And so if we're doing all of the things correctly, then we don't have to worry about state complaints and due process, although those things happen. And when you're a special education teacher, you would be helping collect the information needed to deal with something like that. But that's typically a different, someone else like me would be dealing with something like that. But regardless, your team, the eligibility team, the multidisciplinary team, needs to consider that there are no major contradictions between reports, that there's a clear link between the data and the needs of the student. So it shouldn't be, the findings shouldn't be something completely out of left field, right? It would be something that we're pretty much expecting. If a student's struggling in reading in class, then it makes sense that they would be having challenges in the standardized achievement testing. And there also needs to be some understanding that there is a link between how the child's performing and what is happening instructionally for them. So for example, if you had a student in middle school who, for purposes of this conversation, had strong grades historically, but had some recent increases in absences, had some emotional concerns noted by the school counselor, their packet may look like this. In this example, some limited behavioral data, no functional assessment, and some minimal input from multiple teachers. So if you get a packet like this on a student who has those needs, again, strong grades historically, recent increases in absences, emotional concerns, and you're receiving a packet that has limited data, right? You don't get a lot of the behavioral piece. The child hasn't had a functional behavior assessment, or anything related to that emotional piece. And, you know, we haven't really had the opportunity to talk to the teachers. The team is going to struggle because they don't have enough data to move forward. We can't answer the questions about whether the child has a disability or if there's an adverse impact or even if specially designed instruction is required. And one of those exclusionary factors that we've talked about is the absences and attendance. So we have to keep that in mind when we look at any referral information before we move forward to do further assessment. When we have a lack of information or confusing information, this delays decisions that are made for students,